consistency rather than for any particular public benefit. I bought several products with me today. None of these products is covered by the bottle bill, but all could be just as easily as wine coolers. Some of these products, such as apple juice, which also look just like bottles covered by the bottle bill, might actually outsell wine coolers. And they all collectively constitute many, many times the solid waste and litter volume of wine coolers. Why single out wine coolers? If litter and recycling problems are deemed serious enough to warrant legislation at this time, we strongly urge you to adopt a measure to deal with litter and recycling, rather than the extremely insignificant category of wine cooler bottles. We would be willing to suffer a hardship if the solution imposed upon us actually accomplished something. For this reason, we have caused to be introduced in the House of Representatives, House Bill 2007. This bill proposes for Oregon a litter and recycling assessment which would be imposed on all businesses generating litter. Products now subject to the bottle bill would be exempted from the assessment. The proposed assessment is just like Washington, and it's, in essence, I think, what Mr. Pratt has just told you. I think that we could have something like this for our state. And Senator Bradley, as far as determining gross sales, I think that in order to determine one's net income to pay our income tax somewhere along the line, you must determine what your gross sales were, so that we can determine that. House Bill 2007, which I think I've had distributed to you, proposes that the assessment be used for cleanup efforts and for recycling efforts. And again, Judy Lynch, who hopefully will get to testify, can maybe suggest something about what might be done in Oregon, which will be different from Washington. I think you would find that in promoting curbside recycling, promoting recycling in general, you would get a very enthusiastic response from grocers if you would just refrain from imposing more of a bottle bill on them. The thing that we really look at is, this year may be the year of the wine cooler bottle. Next year, 1989, would be the year of the mayonnaise jar. 1991 could be the year of the apple juice. And we can keep legislators and lobbyists going around for decades, or we could end it and say, we're going to find another way back to a worthy end for these products. Not back to the store, but through another system we could develop with funds from the House Bill 2007. So the Oregon legislature has the opportunity at this time to make Oregon first again with environmental protection legislation. We could become the first state to have both the bottle bill and the litter and recycling assessment. By relying only on the bottle bill, Oregon has fallen behind, according to Mr. Sarek's studies, Washington, in roadside cleanliness. Business in and out of Oregon will be impressed by the manner in which this legislature deals with Senate Bill 508. I believe you will favorably affect the business climate in Oregon if you refrain from imposing a burdensome obligation and expense on business for no substantial public purpose. On the other hand, passage of Senate Bill 508 will help foster and perpetuate Oregon's image as a come-to-visit-but-please-don't-stay state. I'm concerned about the legitimate needs of business.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cairns.
Can I interrupt there? I think one of the ways we could deal with the litter problem is to put a $10 tax on the utterance by anybody representing any association or any other circumstance for every time they say or mention the words image of Oregon or wrong signal. If we would ban those from our vocabulary, Oregon's image would recover overnight because it's I had to throw that in.
I'll support that as long as it's not retroactively.
Excuse me, Mr. Williams, I interrupted you.
I'm sorry, Senator, I should not have interrupted you.
I'll never do it again.
If you must enact Senate Bill 508, I just have the following points. We request that you adopt a July 1989 effective date. This would permit us, I hope, time to start a third-party recycling effort in Portland under Senate Bill 971. This would save us about $200,000 of the expense for capital improvements set forth. It would be a tragedy if we had to spend $200,000 to get the bottles back for 2 years, and then we have a third-party system available after that time. We also have one other, there's two other states in the country, Iowa and Michigan, that have one cool bottle wells. Michigan's not effective until July 1, 1989. The Gallup plant does not do anything for Iowa now. The Iowa distributors have to sit there in the warehouse and stick on 5-cent labels. We would save Oregon distributors a great problem if we could wait until Michigan goes online, and then we think the Gallo plant, the Bells and James plant, would have enough between Michigan, Iowa, and Oregon to run separate runs of cooler through their plant. We oppose exclusive territories. I won't go into that anymore, and we don't like handling fees either. But we hope you do not reach those areas and just reject the bill and try and get 2007 passed. I put a listing of some of this to Jordan, 17,000 items. I couldn't bring everything, but I did put a list on the last two pages of your testimony. One last point. I made a little chart, probably at the suggestion of a comment made by Senator Kearns, of the differences between what we could get with the bottle bill and what we get with Senate Bill 508 and what we get with the litter and recycling assessment. On the three graphs. I don't know if you have that.
Yeah, I see that
handout. And
yeah.
But the bottle bill costs $17 a year per Oregonian. That's not just the wine cooler bottle bill. And the litter and recycling tax would run somewhere between 50 and 75 cents. We could get rid of 25,000 tons, according to, again, Ms. Rumpf will testify, of recyclable goods, as opposed to 2,500 tons under Senate Bill 508. I thank you very much for your
patience.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Mr.
Senator Kearns,
the $17 per person, that bottle bill, that's for as it now exists.
That's the whole thing,
this
right?
Is the estimate of the addition to price for the cost for all of the aspects, both on behalf of the distributor and the retailer in carrying out the bottle bills. That with that 17, I don't pay $17 worth of deposit to get it back. That's the price that I pay in the product. Is that what
that's the cost? That's the cost of the bottle bill. Exclusive of deposit.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you to hold on for a minute because
yes.
We have a member that has to leave at 5. Maybe even 2, I don't know. But I want to temporarily close the hearing on Senate Bill 508 and open a work session on a couple of bills. First, I want to open a work session on Senate Bill 122. We just got these rather thick amendments that I've even now lost. Basically, the amendments to Senate Bill 122 reflect all the amendments we have already adopted, run through council so that they can be reviewed to make sure all the statutory references are correct. Jeanette Holman, who did the drafting on this, has assured me that there are no substantive changes in the amendments from what we already adopted. There are just some corrections of references and cross-references. And that is the only change from the bill we adopted, I guess, on
Friday?
Wednesday, last Wednesday.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kearns.
Can you or staff direct me in this now, this LC 122-6, on the liability section on the...
Is Stan here?
Who's liable and what's the
standard?
He's coming up with a good case.
Your question, Senator Kearns, again, it would be, is? Who is liable under the bill?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Alan Solaris with Department of Environmental Quality. There are basically five categories of persons that are strictly liable under this bill. Those are the owner or operator of the site at the time that the contamination occurred. Secondly, someone who purchased the site after the contamination occurred, but who was knowledgeable that the contamination was there at the time that they purchased it.
Who was knowledgeable?
Who was knowledgeable.
Or had reason to
know. Or had reason to know.
All right, there's a difference.
It's, it covers both of those categories. The third category then is a secretive seller, which is a person who knows that they have a contaminated site. They turn around and sell to somebody but didn't disclose to that person that it was contaminated. Fourthly, there's what we might term a bad actor, who would be a person who basically a midnight dumper, somebody who contributes or causes to contamination at a site, unless they were in compliance with applicable laws at the time. But if they took some hazardous substance and dumped it on somebody's property, they're a bad actor. And lastly, an unlawfully hindering person, which means someone who prevents the department from conducting investigation or remedial action at a site. Those five categories of people are strictly liable under this bill.
Page 13 and 14, Senator.
All right. Okay.
Let me assure the
Senator
that
Section 10.
No changes were made, as far as I know, in that section.
That's correct.
In that home.
That's right. These have been purely technical changes in order to maintain internal consistency, terminology, and cross-references.
Active guard doesn't count. Active war doesn't count.
I like the definition of active guard. Not just a serious natural disaster, but a grave natural disaster. Yes. Senator Cairns, do you have any further questions?
No.
What's the committee's pleasure? Is it okay to go ahead with
sure.
this?
Ooh, I can move it.
Senator Cohen moves that the committee adopt Legislative Council Amendments 122-6, dated 4-6-87. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection?
Mr. Chair, have we ever
Senator
received a fiscal impact statement on this bill?
Did we start?
I don't recall the number of employees added to DEQ, et cetera.
They were here before us testifying about what they might be doing with the discovery and site assessment work.
Right. Is that what you're talking about, Senator Hamby, is the additional increment for the amendment to mandate a site discovery program, or are you referring to the program as a whole?
Well, my recollection of the amendments was the amendments pretty well tied it to within budgetary resources. So if the bill passes, Ways and Means can adjust it so that it's zero and nothing happens, because it says within budgetary resources they'll do site discovery.
That's true, particularly of the preliminary assessment section.
Is there any further discussion on the motion to adopt the 122-6 amendments? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. I think we're done with this bill, and the next step would be to move it to Ways and Means. Senator Hamby moves that we send Senate Bill 122 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Brenneman?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye.
Hamby?
Aye.
Cairns?
Aye.
Kintai?
No.
Monroe?
Excused.
Bradbury?
Aye. Motion is adopted. Happy to have that one out of our Okay, now I would like to open the work session on Senate Bill 606, which is the ocean exploration bill. We have the 606-2 amendments. The reason this bill was called back was because of a wide-open ability to levy fees by the Division of State Lands, and so we have inserted new language on pay. Everyone have the Hannah Gross bill? 606-2 engrossed. New language is inserted on lines 24, well, it shows this, on page 2, line 24, 25, 26. And that's the new language that's to control the fees. And then we should also, that should be added, in that language about the amount of the fee may not exceed the cost of processing the application should be added in two other places. On page 4 of the Hannon Gross bill, after line 15, instead of a period, there should be a comma, and it should read, pursuant to this section, the amount of which may not exceed the cost of processing the applications. And on page 6, line 22, same amendment, the amount of which may not exceed the cost of processing the applications. And it's my understanding that by limiting the fees in this way, we avoid needing to send the bill to the Ways and Means Committee. That's my understanding. I don't think Ways and Means would particularly have any problem with the bill, but other than that, the bill reflects, we adopted, when we sent 606 out, we adopted the amendments drafted by Division of State Lands. The new language on page 3, 4, 5, and 6 doesn't make any changes in what the concept was in the division's amendments. It does put it in proper form and style. So, I guess I will move that we adopt the Legislative Council Amendment 606-2 with the two changes that I enumerated on page 4 and page 6 of the Hannon Gross bill. Is there any objection to the adoption of those amendments? Hearing none, so ordered. I think the bill is in shape.
Do we still have the language, Mr. Chair, of the low mean tide and the outer circumvention boundary?
Yes. Let me find that for you. It's still in here somewhere.
I just...
If you look at page 3, line 27 and 28. Senator Hamby. Can you explain to me
I just have nightmares over a thought of all these dredges dotted up and down the coastline. I just wanted to warn you that.
Well, I'm not sure.
I'm going to
I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, we'll come back to some other day.
Well, you perhaps don't need my vote.
Well, it sounds like I do.
Second count. I don't need to read about it.
Well, I guess I'd like to, let's have a discussion. I'd like to understand what the problems are that are surfacing.
So the problems are just uneasiness I guess, about, and admittedly, what we're here is we're publicly acknowledging that we're going to go forward on this. I know that there are people out there who want to sort of rush into it all and begin dredging around, and I have the same sort of uneasiness as Senator Hamby does about it. And I also understand that us not doing anything probably doesn't help anybody either. You know, I guess I'd want to hear from Senator Brennan a little bit about how does this help?
Well,
or bring to rationality or whatever.
We've got this situation of the black sands being out there off our coast, and I happen to believe they're of the nature that they could be of strategic value to the country, especially if some of our current supplies of cream, South Africa would get it to their liking not to supply us with that anymore. I think the federal government might preempt us anyway and just move right in and go ahead with the situation. Oregon State is in the position of providing some research to locate and map out the amounts of the black sand and what's out there, but there's no money to do that except from private funds. There are people that are willing to put up to $5 million, as I understand, in Oregon State to fund. And if they do that, they want to have some kind of reasonable assurance that they'll be able to be in position at the end of the line and to mine them. Not that there are any guarantees that they will be mined, but if they, I think if they are willing to come forward and provide that kind of money to find them, locate them, and assess what's there, then they should have some reasonable degree of thought that they're going to be able to recoup their investment in the research. There's not that much money, as I understand, in research and locating these types of deposits now, and I think we're fortunate to be able to have that paid privately. I think this bill is necessary in order to take a forward look from the state's position. We have to rely on the federal government to come into it. I think we'll be much worse off. We'll have some degree of control this way.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Hamby.
John, I guess I have absolutely no quarrel with the majority of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to assume, perhaps, that standing along one of Oregon's beaches, I mean, you're not going to see this activity is not going to be all that visible, the majority of the bill. What I'm concerned about is the language, the submerged lands between the line of mean low tide and the outer surf. And I guess I just, as I say, could envision all sorts of small business people, dredgers, with their, you know, 8-inch, 11-inch dredges, hose-wise, I mean, going into the black sand. I don't know how Oregonians would respond. I think there's a need for the majority of the language. You know, testing further out, et cetera. I'm concerned about the surf line. And we inserted that language to deal with the needs of the smaller dredgers, and I certainly sympathize with them.
Well, I'm sorry, Wendy, there are certainly enough safeguards, I think, to take care of objections should that occur, but there must be some circumstances, and I think you'd at least want to take a look at it.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine this state allowing the main control a situation to improve the detriment of the beaches.
I guess I would prefer, if you look at the whole thing, in terms of the controls on these prospecting permits, you have to provide notice to agencies and planning directors. You have to hold a public hearing.
on the proposed permit in the county in which the lands are situated. We have to develop such permit conditions as may be necessary to protect the interests of the state and ensure consistency with statewide planning goals. We have to consult with the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, the State Department of Fish and Wildlife, the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and you have to pay a fee. I don't know what current law allows. I'm not sure what current law. Well, I think it does. It just doesn't do it quite so. I'm not sure. I wish Martha Pato was here.
I was sure. It sounds like we're going to carry it over at any rate, at least till the next meeting.
Fine. We'll do that.
You need one more time?
That's fine. I don't mind carrying it over. I wish that Martha could be, and that she had to leave, but if she was here, what you would hear from Martha is a very clear statement that she has worked tirelessly with my staff and with the person who's interested in doing that mining, black sands mining, to ensure that there was nothing in the bill that binds the division's hands in terms of saying, even after exploration is done, mm-hmm. no, we're not going to develop this. Mm-hmm. But it's basically a way to find out more about what's there without predetermining that you're going to be able to develop it. I mean, it's sort of, that's the risk of these people spending money finding out what's there.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you how totally gone it is to not require that they give a yes to development. It's just real tight. But I don't know. I mean, I'm a little bit intrigued. We'll get Martha here because I'm a little bit intrigued about this other level of concern. I sort of don't fully understand it myself. I mean, I don't understand how that
is. It's just that section. It's just that language in those two lines.
Okay.
I certainly see the need for exploration, and I'm totally supportive of it.
Okay. We will bring it back.
And then the thought of perhaps a little bit of gold being found in the black sand can generate such excitement out at the shore that I'd be concerned.
So, okay, fine. That's fine. We'll bring it back. We'll close the work session on 6:06 and reopen continue the hearing on Senate Bill 508. Mr. Syrek. Sorry we had to make you sit through all that. No?
Mr. Chairman, Senators, my name is Dan Syrek. I'm the director of the Institute for Applied Research. It's always a pleasure to come back to Oregon. My father grew up in the state. My brother attended university, and I spent many vacations and actually worked here for a period. The Institute in the last 14 years has done 34 major surveys in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. We've counted or picked up a total of over 1.4 million items of litter from over 2,800 locations. In the first 2 weeks of September of 1986, we did a litter survey in the state of Oregon at 126 locations, randomly selected west of Highway 97. These sites average 540 feet in length. We think that our technology that we've developed over a period of years is superior to most others that are doing litter surveys in that we carefully select sites that are randomly selected to represent where the people are actually spending their time. By this token, our data indicates that only 17% of the time the Oregonians as motorists or pedestrians spend time on the state highway system, whereas they spend about 43% of their time on residential streets, and all about 64% of their time is spent on urban streets. So we weight our data accordingly. We also are careful to pick up items down to bottle cap or pull tab size, whereas the Division of Highways data only reflects items around matchbook size or larger. As a result, our data indicated that approximately 0.14% of all of the 15,300 items that we counted were wine coolers. This is somewhat lower than that figure presented to you by the Division of Highways data. Our data does indicate also that the wine coolers are more prevalent on rural county roads at a rate of 0.44%, and of course these roads are cleaned much less often than those on the city highway. In residential areas, the percentage is only 0.06%. We also went into recreation areas, which the typically Division Highway studies don't do. We went along the sides of rivers and sort along the sides of lakes. So we got a fairly accurate presentation of where Oregonians are spending their time and what they are encountering in the way of litter. This total count of 15,300 items, of which only 24 were wine coolers, gives us a percentage of about 0.14%. This compares very well with the percentages that we measured in nearby states of Washington during the survey in 1985 and California in 1986. It also is close to that reported by the state of Michigan, where their Department of Transportation had a value of about 0.14%.